Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Denisa reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram, local and state, for Friday, May 27th, 2022. Midland gas price stays below state. Lowest averages in Texas are in Lubbock and Amarillo, with averages of $3.99. The average price of gasoline in Midland remained below the state average for the second straight week. AAA Texas reported Thursday that the average price in Midland, $4.19 a gallon, dropped not only 4 cents this week, but moved to 7 cents below the average across the state. Last week was the first time in recent memory that the average in Midland fell below the state average. Other notables about the AAA Texas report included: the average in Midland remains 2 cents higher than the average in Odessa, $4.17. The lowest average in Texas are north of Midland. Lubbock and Amarillo both showed averages of $3.99. Other averages across West Texas included $4.45 in Abilene, $4.18 in El Paso, and $4.19 in San Angelo. And the most expensive gas can be found in Texarkana, $4.35. AAA Texas also reported that after increasing for 6 consecutive weeks, retail gas price averages in Texas have decreased slightly as 3.2 million Texans plan to travel over Memorial Day weekend, with 2.8 million of them expected to drive. That is a 5% increase over last year and just below record levels set in 2019. AAA Texas also noted that despite dropping from record highs, fuel prices remain elevated and will likely continue to fluctuate as crude oil remains above $110 per barrel. Texas drivers will pay 56% more for fuel on average this Memorial Day compared to last year, according to the report. The average in Midland was $2.99. 1 year ago. The difference of $1.20 a gallon is the lowest in the state and 33 cents lower than the difference across the state, $1.53. Animal shelter exceeds capacity. MASA, shelter needs to be last resort for people having to bring their pet. Earlier this week, Midland Animal Shelter Adoptables, MASA, a nonprofit that works to help provide homes to animals brought into the shelter, posted the following. Midland Animal Shelter is filling up every day with owner surrenders and residents bringing in strays. It is important everyone understands that the shelter does euthanize. So many dogs are coming in and there is literally nowhere to put them. This was a plea for help. Whether it is inflation, a product of the industry where people come and go, or people returning to the office and not needing a four-legged companion like they did during a pandemic, this dumping of animals at the shelter and rescues across the town has exposed a problem in Midland, according to Tracy Gearhart, president of MASA, and that problem is that people are acting like they don't care. Gearhart provided some tips to those thinking about abandoning their pet or those who see a stray in their neighborhood. For those who might need to abandon a dog or cat, she recommended that a person contact the shelter first or a nonprofit like Midland Animal Shelter Adoptables or Fix West Texas. Sometimes those organizations have access to pet food when someone is in need or can provide valuable advice before someone has to make a decision. Gearhart said when it comes to strays, the situation doesn't start at the animal shelter, but in a neighborhood where the animal was found. First, if a person finds an animal, contact the property owner. If the animal is away from its home, a person can go to a vet or PetSmart to see if the animal is microchipped, which should provide an address for the animal. There shouldn't be a charge, she said. If that doesn't work, Gearhart recommends going to the Nextdoor app. She said that is the most effective way to reunite these animals that have been lost or found, and that someone who has lost a four-legged friend isn't likely to check the pound until it is too late, if at all. Gearhart said that animals are being brought in at a pace that when a kennel, especially for dogs, opens up, there is an animal to fill it. She said even when she has pulled animals to move on to a foster or rescue, it doesn't take long for the vacancies to fill up. City officials confirmed that the shelter is operating at or exceeding capacity. Gearhart said 40 animals came in on Wednesday alone. She added that officials at Midland Animal Shelter euthanize for three reasons: a medical crisis, aggressive animals, or kennel space. In the case of euthanizing for space, dogs that have been there the longest are the first ones killed. The community is failing their animals, Gearhart said. It is very frustrating. Gearhart acknowledged that life can provide reasons for abandoning animals, but she just hopes that owners would put forth more effort to see what resources are available and more effort toward finding homes for animals. She said just because the shelter is new, the ribbon cutting was in October, doesn't mean an outcome changes once its population is deemed to be too high. The shelter needs to be the last resort for people having to bring their pet, Gearhart said. Feds to invest $1.5 million in Andrews. The Andrews Economic Development Corporation is set to receive $1.5 million for infrastructure for a business park. The Commerce Department in Washington, D.C., reported this week that its Economic Development Administration will award the grant to the Economic Development Corporation in Andrews to support a new business park. The grant is funded by the American Rescue Plan, according to a press release. This project will provide road and water infrastructure for the Northwest Business Park, supporting business development and growth, the news release stated. The EDA grant will be matched with $2.4 million in local funds and is expected to create 50 jobs and generate $62 million in private investment, according to grantee estimates. The project will be located on around 200 acres of land between Loop 1910, Highway 155, and Southwest Mustang Drive in the southwest part of the city. The EDA investment will provide new space for businesses to grow in West Texas, supporting a robust, diverse regional economy, said Secretary of Commerce Gina M. Raimondo in the release. The Economic Development Administration works closely with communities to support locally driven economic development strategies to drive growth, said Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development Alejandra Y. Castillo in the release. The infrastructure improvements provided through the EDA investment will create new opportunities for businesses to locate and expand in Andrews, creating good-paying jobs in the community. Governor Greg Abbott is quoted in the release as saying, "Road and water infrastructure is vital to the development of our communities, and I thank the Economic Development Administration for this grant supporting the Northwest Business Park in Andrews. This investment will create more jobs and greater economic opportunities for Texans in the Permian Basin for generations to come." This project is funded under EDA's American Rescue Plan Economic Adjustment Assistance Program, which makes $500 million in economic adjustment assistance grants available to American communities. Permian Basin Area Foundation awards $2.3 million in grants. Permian Basin Area Foundation awarded $2.319 million to nonprofit organizations serving West Texas during its spring competitive grant cycle. "It is an honor to work with these nonprofit organizations for their good works," said Grants Administrator Raymond Williams. "Our nonprofit community serves so many in our communities, and it is a privilege to award these grants." The foundation awarded more than $11.2 million in grants and scholarships in 2021. Since being established in 1989, Permian Basin Area Foundation has awarded more than $132 million in grants and scholarships. Semi-annually, the foundation announces competitive grant awards following a review of applications submitted in the spring and fall. The fall grant cycle applications are due on October 1st. Visit pbaf.org to apply. Obituaries for May 27th, 2022. James Derb Weeks. James Derb Weeks of Cleburne, Texas, passed away Monday, May 23rd, at the age of 86. A visitation will be held from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, May 28, 2022, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be held at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, Sunday, May 29, 2022, at 10 a.m., followed by graveside services at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Derb leaves behind his wife of 47 years, June Weeks, and his seven children, Rhonda Fife of New Orleans, Vicky Bomar of Alamosa, Brenda McClelland of Liverpool, Greg Weeks of Midland, Diane Darrington of Midland, Ty Harbison of Floresville, and Miranda Scott of Cleburne, 13 grandchildren and 18 great-grandchildren. Derb was born in La Mesa, Texas, on October 16, 1935, to Leroy Weeks and Maudine Porter. He had two sisters, Rena Hoag and Gladys Womack of La Mesa, brother Preston Weeks of Bay City, and Jody Weeks of San Angelo. He was preceded in death by his mother and father, two sisters, brother Kirby, and his beloved Bud, his brother Preston. Willie Myers. Willie Lawrence Jr. Myers, 78, of Monahans, Texas, departed from this life on Thursday, May 19, 2022, a couple of days after surgery. Willie was born in DeBary, Texas, to his parents Lemon and Willie Mae Myers on September 2, 1943. Willie is survived by his son, Layman Myers, his mother, Annie Dugas, Deborah Brown, Vernell Myers, with grandchildren, all of Monahans, Texas, Michael Myers, Keosha Myers, Allie Myers, and Arlissa Myers of Carlsbad, New Mexico, with great-grandchildren Josiah J. Bravo and Jonas C. Bravo, stepchildren Ebony Brown and Cecil Brown, four grandchildren Taj, Genesis, and Tiana and Denzel Rodriguez, with a host of nieces, nephews, cousins, and relatives in Midland, Texas. Visitation will be held Friday, May 27, 2022, starting at 9 a.m. at Harkey Funeral Home, with a vigil from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Service will be held Saturday, May 28, 2022, at 3 p.m. at Shiloh Baptist Church in Monahans, Texas.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Friday, May 27th. ECISD offers Uvalde a helping hand. When Ector County ISD officials learned of the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Superintendent Scott Murray said they reacted in horror and sprang into action. The gunman, Salvador Ramos, 18, killed 19 elementary students and two teachers Tuesday. He was killed by law enforcement. I'm not sure that there are any appropriate words that could capture the feelings and thoughts of educators throughout ECISD, but know that we are horrified at having seen that and just cannot imagine the unspeakable trauma that those kids, parents, and teachers are going through and what their entire community is going through at this time, Murray said. He added that the district has reached out to the people in Uvalde. One of the things that is most needed right now is social-emotional support. Families and friends, that entire community, the students and staff members at that school need significant support. We have experts in our own system, and we've offered their expertise, if needed, to that community, and we will continue to support them, Murray said. We've learned through our own tragic experience in Ector County from August of 2019 that trauma does not disappear after a day, a week, or a month. It is sustained for a long period of time, and just as those from other parts of the country continue to support our needs as a community, we will continue to support the needs of that small community here in Texas, he added. In response to that, ECISD has heightened its own security on its own campuses. School ended Thursday, and extra officers from the ECISD Police, Odessa Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, and Texas Department of Public Safety are on and around campuses. We appreciate the local law enforcement officials that are in conjunction with our own police department are ensuring that our kids and staff members remain safe on their campuses as well as at events, Murray said. Graduations for Permian and Odessa High School are tonight and Saturday, respectively. We will have heightened security and awareness at each of those events as well, Murray said. In addition, moms and dads, we know that having these difficult conversations with your own children can be traumatic and difficult, and so we have supports for you as well on the ECISD website. On the very front page, we've made available some conversation starters, so as a parent, what do you say? How do you talk with your child about these traumatic situations? All of that information is available on the ECISD website, www.ectorcountyisd.org. There is a link on the very front page that will take you to our social, emotional, or mental health resources, he added. Murray said children may not be ready to talk about it today, tomorrow, or even next week. But at some point, our children at every age are going to need to have a conversation about what they're hearing and what they're reading and what they're perceiving. It may dredge up memories from our own community's tragedy 2 years ago, Murray said. He noted that this is graduation season. We wish to congratulate all the students who will be making their way across the stage and receiving a high school diploma, Murray said. One of the interesting things about our seniors is that many of them have already graduated from college. Many of our students take dual credit courses from Odessa College, and their graduation was 2 weeks ago. So many of our students walked across that stage receiving a college school diploma, and then this week a high school diploma. We really appreciate and applaud the extra effort on the part of those students, Murray said. The summer presents an opportunity for our students to continue to not only receive some additional learning through the summer learning program, but to get sustenance, both breakfast and lunch. Our annual summer feeding program will continue through this summer in ECISD, Murray said. Information as to times and locations is on the website, he said. None of our students need to go hungry this summer. We recognize that many of our students really depend upon our schools 5 days a week for breakfast and lunch, and we want to continue that throughout the summer months, Murray said. The Texas House and Senate were in session this week. Committees for those two bodies, specifically the Education Committee, were beginning to study their interim charges, and the Education Committees each had a series of charges that they were exploring. This week, Ector County ISD was invited to speak to both the House and the Senate as they explored their interim charges. Our purpose was to discuss with them some of the work we're doing in Ector County and the success we're having, specifically around our human capital work, that is, recruiting, attracting, and retaining great teachers, Murray said. They wanted to know how we're doing that, what are the strategies that we're using and having success with in ACISD, how could the state better leverage those strategies across the state of Texas so that as a whole we could attract, recruit, and retain great teachers throughout the state of Texas, he said. In addition to that, they were interested in learning about how we are addressing the learning loss of our students. They were specifically interested in our virtual tutoring and outcomes-based contracting work that we're doing, as well as the summer learning work that's happening in ECISD, Murray added. STEM Students Take on Boat Races by Ruth Campbell. Using the engineering and project-based learning skills they have acquired at UTPB STEM Academy, high school students tried their luck at the annual boat races Thursday at the University of Texas Permian Basin Pool. Lines of parents gathered outside the fence and lawn chairs and standing to watch the event. There were 48 boats in the race. Students had 2 days to build their cardboard and duct tape crafts and paddles. Teams had 4 members each, with 2 in the boats. There also was a teacher boat with a paddle wheel. For the materials, they're only allowed to use cardboard and duct tape. And then there are certain parameters they have to follow when building the actual structure. So they can't go more than 2 layers of cardboard. They can't have air pockets built into their boats. The rest is up to their imagination, curriculum and instruction director Candy Sykes said. The boats can't be longer than 7 feet or more than 3 feet wide. They have to fit through the door of the school building. Carrie Grammett Bauer, a teacher at STEM and an organizer of the races, said the boats can't be longer than 7 feet or more than 3 feet wide. It has to fit through the door of the school building we built at the school. One of the things that middle school didn't have to have was paddles. Their paddles can't be more than 6 layers of cardboard thick, Grammett Bauer said. Sykes said there are 6 heats, which are timed. There's 2 obstacles. One, do they make it to what's called the bulkhead in the middle, and then the 8th fastest boats to the bulkhead, then do a final championship round. The winner of that final round is deemed the high school boat champions for that year, Sykes said. In a tradition started last year, the winner of the middle school boat races comes back and races in the final heat with the high schoolers. So they kind of get introduced into the high school realm by coming back and racing our high schoolers, Sykes said. This is the 8th year the races have been held, and Grammett Bauer said they learn something new every time. This year has been a challenge on cardboard. A lot of the people that we were getting cardboard from in the past, they've gone to more earth-friendly measures, storing their stuff, and so they don't have so much cardboard as they used to. Mr. Jeff Van did a really good job of getting cardboard, she said. Because the cardboard wasn't uniform this year, Grammett Bauer said they could bring their own, but it couldn't be waxy or more than 2 layers thick. Students didn't get to practice beforehand, and they are supposed to follow the engineering process. It's really a fun challenge, 16-year-old junior Samuel Davidson said. Also, I'm in the engineering pathway, so I think of it as a way to test my skills each year and what I've learned throughout engineering, Davidson said. He added that his teams usually do all right. Our paddles are our main issues, but our boat overall, it's always been structurally well done, Davidson said. Callie Goodson, Quinn Curry, and Cassie Browning, all 15, won their heat and were victorious for the whole event. We didn't think it was going to work. we didn't even think we were going to qualify with these kinds of paddles, much less win, Goodson said. Curry added that the paddles were unorthodox, but they worked. They looked like duct tape suction cups. They were the middle school champions last year. Annabelle Kirk, a 14-year-old ninth grader, was on a boat that didn't make it across, but said they enjoyed building their boat. We had a lot of fun, Kirk said. Carson Thayer and Hagen Hart, both 13-year-old seventh graders, were going to take part in the high school race this year. I feel a bit nervous because they're bigger, but I think we have kind of a chance, Thayer said. As for strategy, Hart said they were going to paddle as hard as they could. Seniors Bria Ball, Ireland Rogers, and Elena Aguirre knew they weren't going to win the whole thing, but they had fun anyway. Paddling is hard, Ball said. It's tiring. Local Law Enforcement Prepares for Grad Weekend by Royal McGregor. Prior to the culmination of graduation weekend, local law enforcement agencies gathered together to ask students and parents to make safe decisions. Members of the Odessa Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, UTPB Police Department, and Ector County Hospital District were joined by Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven and the Modessa Community Alliance Coalition to speak about Operation Graduation. The press conference took place Thursday morning in the Abel Marquez training room at the OPD training facility. Odessa Police Department Chief Michael Gerke said the state of Texas has gone through enough heartache this week, and he doesn't want that sorrow to spill over into the graduation weekend. Speaking to the graduates, your loved ones don't need to deal with tragedy, Gerke told the Odessa American. Imagine if one student is seriously injured or dies because of drugs or alcohol. That affects their family. It affects their teachers. It affects their classmates. It affects their friends. There's so many people that get affected by that. It's a wonderful life that gets cut short. Operation Graduation is to deter underage drinking and ensure the public has a safe graduation weekend. Gerke said there are between 15 and 18 officers on patrol, but during Operation Graduation, that number will increase between 7 to 9. He said the increase will be across all law enforcement agencies in the area. Gerke said he appreciates law enforcement's ability to work together. As law enforcement has evolved, we all understand that we are part of a region that needs to help each other out, Gerke said. Our problem is not one department's problem. It's the entire region's problem. We understand the goal is to make the citizens' life better. Though underage drinking is the main priority during Operation Graduation, another precaution is drug use, especially in the case of fentanyl. Sarah Hinshaw, the program director for the Modessa Community Alliance Coalition, said during the press conference that fentanyl is in the Odessa community, and she urges students to be wary as the drug is extremely dangerous. Fentanyl is going into everything, Hinshaw said. It doesn't take more than a speck of fentanyl to overdose. Odessa Crime Stoppers will be fielding calls about underage drinking parties throughout the weekend. Hinshaw said the fine for hosting a party can be no less than $250 and up to $2,000. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said graduation weekend is a time for celebration, not a time to make life-changing decisions. Don't make a decision on graduation night that may map out the rest of your life, Griffiths said. During the Odessa City Council's regular scheduled meeting, the council agreed to amend a city ordinance so law enforcement officers can issue citations to parents who facilitate underage drinking by renting party buses, limos, and recreational vehicles. Hoven said during the meeting that he wants this graduation weekend to be the safest on record. Holy Cross to Have First Graduation by Ruth Campbell. Just 3 years in, Holy Cross Catholic High School is having their first graduating class today. Commencement is at 7 p.m. at the Way Retreat Center, 4014 North County Road 1160, which is where the high school is located. Head of school Carolyn Gonzalez said they are excited but sad at the same time. There are three students in the senior class. Gonzalez said they are thankful that God allowed them to open the school, find a home, and have students who stayed with the school to graduate. The next senior class should be larger as there are 17 juniors. The school signed a 50-year lease with the Way Retreat Center, and their name is in front now, Gonzalez said. Kaylee Madrid, 17, Kylie Franklin, 19, and Matt Crawley, 18, are the school's first graduates. I think graduating is pretty cool because it's not something I think everyone gets to experience at some point. I think it's cool, and especially being the first group to graduate from here adds to that, Crawley said. He was going to the University of Hawaii, but decided he's going to work for a little bit before he decides to go to school. Madrid said she is honored to graduate. Being part of the first class makes her feel special. I didn't go to this school for my whole high school. This is my first and last year here, so it makes it even more special, Madrid said. What drew her to Holy Cross is that they care. It's more like a family than an actual school, Madrid said. She added that she plans to attend Midland College to become a nurse. Franklin said she thinks graduating is amazing. For me, it's been a long time coming. I've spent 5 years in high school. I stayed back a year so I could go to this school. I'm really sad to go. But at the same time, I'm ready to start the next chapter of my life, Franklin said. I'm going to miss everybody, but they've helped me become the young woman I am. Thanks to them, I'm ready to start the next chapter of my life, she added. She plans to attend Our Lady of the Lake University in San Antonio to become a secondary English teacher. I'm also on full academic scholarship, so my first year is entirely paid for off of scholarships that I've earned, Franklin said. Her mother found Holy Cross, and when Franklin met her, she realized this was where she was supposed to be. I figure that sacrificing a year was more than worth continuing my Catholic education, Franklin said. Crawley said he was homeschooled until sophomore year. He arrived at Holy Cross a week late, but he had never been to a school before. When he was introduced to Gonzalez and his classmates, he knew it would be okay. He added that he likes the small class size because if you have a question, the teachers will take time to talk to you about it. Gonzalez said she is appreciative of the students staying with Holy Cross and fighting hard to graduate. Kaylee Madrid had to take a leap of faith. She was at a high school for 3 years and didn't want to leave. She loved her high school and then had to have a leap of faith that her parents were making the right decision in bringing her to Catholic high school, Gonzalez said. But Madrid has loved the school because it's small, and we do introduce their faith to them in a different way. She recently graduated with her associate degree from Odessa College through dual credit. I also think we have the most amazing teachers who love our kids and will teach their hearts out every single day and every minute to ensure that our kids are successful, Gonzalez said. Odessa and Midland colleges have been working with Holy Cross to offer dual credit. The partnerships that we have with the businesses and the colleges, Odessa College has been amazing to work with, and Midland College, we're just beginning. It's just been nice to have a community that supports our young people and will work with them to make sure that they're successful at the end, she added. Groundbreaking set for Pre-K Academy in Midland. Over the next 12 months, Midland College will increase its main campus footprint by building a facility to expand its existing Pre-K Academy and house its growing education program, which includes a bachelor's degree in early childhood through third grade teacher preparation. At 10 a.m. May 31st, the college will officially break ground for the new 60,000-square-foot, two-story structure. The new building will increase the current Pre-K Academy partnership between MC and MISD from 68 seats to 288 seats. thereby fulfilling a dire need in the community for quality pre-K education. In addition, it will also provide a home for Midland College's new early childhood education bachelor's degree program. Anticipated building completion date is fall 2023. The Midland College Pre-K Academy and Center for Teaching Excellence addresses two major challenges facing our community: a shortage of quality early childhood opportunities and a shortage of teachers, MC President Steve Thomas said in a news release. This project is evidence of Midland College's commitment to provide education and training that help our community grow and prosper. Project architect engineering firm is Park Hill. Construction contractor is Adolphson and Peterson Construction. Fundraising for the building is 90% complete, with lead gifts of $10 million each from Permian Strategic Partnership and Scarborough Foundation, Inc. Other major donors include Abel Hanger Foundation, the Beale Foundation, and Henry Foundation. Individuals, families, and businesses are providing additional financial support. For a list of current project donors, please visit www.midland.edu/groundbreaking. Odessan arrested following suspicious death. A 48-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury Thursday after a 55-year-old man was found dead. According to the Odessa Police Department, authorities believe Anthony Jimenez and Jimmy Jimenez were involved in a fight recently, and Jimmy Jimenez was found dead shortly after 8 a.m. Thursday morning. Due to the circumstances of the call and the state of the scene, officers were investigating this as a suspicious death, OPD officials said. An autopsy has been scheduled. Odessan arrested in fatal crash. A 24-year-old Odessa man was arrested Tuesday on warrants charging him with intoxication manslaughter and intoxication assault in connection with a fatal February crash. According to Texas Department of Public Safety records, Alan Valenzuela was driving east on Farm to Market 2020 in a GMC Acadia on February 6th when he failed to control his speed and his vehicle hit a Honda CRV around 2:20 a.m. near North Skylark Avenue. Valenzuela then traveled across the center median into the westbound lanes and hit a Chevrolet Tahoe head-on. Another GMC Acadia then hit the rear of Valenzuela's vehicle. A passenger in the Honda, Amarani Flores, died, and the driver of the Chevy Tahoe suffered serious bodily injuries, as did Valenzuela. Both were taken to Medical Center Hospital. According to the report, blood tests showed Valenzuela had a blood alcohol level of 0.214. Someone with a blood alcohol level of 0.08 is considered legally intoxicated in Texas. Valenzuela was released from the Ector County Jail the same day of his arrest after posting two surety bonds totaling $75,000. Ortega gets 50 years in child sex assault. Editor's note: this story contains graphic descriptions of child sexual abuse by Kim Smith. An Odessa man convicted of having a 2-year-old relative perform oral sex on him will spend 50 years in prison. An Ector County jury took about 90 minutes to determine the sentence of Fabian Andres Ortega, 24. On Wednesday, they deliberated an hour before rendering a guilty verdict on the charge of aggravated sexual assault of a child. The jury deliberated about an hour before sending out a note saying they were deadlocked 11-1 on punishment and seeking direction from Judge John Schrode of the 358th District Court. He instructed them to continue deliberating, and they returned 25 minutes later with their verdict. According to the state's star witness, Fern Garcia, Ortega sent her a photo of the bottom portion of a young girl's face a few months after Garcia and Ortega had met in Del Rio for a sexual encounter. Garcia testified Ortega told her the photo showed a one-year-old relative of his with his semen in her mouth. She told jurors she had asked Ortega for the photo because he had been sending messages to her for weeks on Snapchat about acts the young girl had been performing on him. He had told her he wanted to penetrate her, but she was too small to accommodate him. But eventually he planned to share her with other men, Garcia said. She knew authorities would want evidence of his claims, so she took photographs of their conversations and the photo, knowing they would disappear from the app within 24 hours. Garcia went to authorities the day after she received the photo, and Ortega was indicted a few months later. The jury rejected the defense's argument that the young girl in the photo wasn't Ortega's relative, and there was no definitive proof linking Ortega to the Snapchat account or his phone. Aggravated sexual assault of a child carries a potential sentence of life in prison or a prison term of 25 to 99 years. Because the victim in this case was under the age of 6, Ortega is not eligible for parole. On Thursday morning, Assistant Ector County District Attorneys William Prasher and Melissa Rain told the jury a life sentence was appropriate considering the sentence he imposed upon his victim, a sentence she'll never escape from. If they thought a lesser sentence was more appropriate, the prosecutor said the jurors should start at 99 years and then find reasons to come down from there. Prasher urged the jurors to consider the victim's point of view, society's point of view, and the defendant's point of view when determining the sentence. Defense attorney Violet Laton White argued 25 years was a long enough term, pointing out that it's longer than Ortega has been alive. Life sentences should be reserved for the most egregious, horrible crimes, White said. She urged the jury to consider Ortega's age, family support, and lack of a prior criminal history. She also told individual jurors to hold firm on their personal beliefs. In her final closing argument, Rain pounced on one of White's statements. She just told you what the sentence should be. Life is reserved for the most aggravated crimes, Rain said. Rain also asked the jurors to consider Ortega's niece and future nephew when rendering their verdict, along with any other young children he might encounter in the future. She also reminded jurors to think about all of the messages he sent Garcia. Think about the plans he had for the victim when she got older, when she got bigger, Rain said. Following the sentencing, the victim's mother gave a victim impact statement in the presence of the jury. Addressing Ortega, she told him she had led a sheltered life up until her daughter was victimized by him, and never believed something like what happened could happen. She said she has come to realize there is real evil in the world, but also knows there are really good people, too. She described the jurors, the prosecutors, law enforcement officers, and the rest of the state's witnesses as her daughter's angels. She then went on to describe all of the people in her daughter's life who will be there for her no matter what, noting she is blessed because she knows they'll even choose her daughter over her. This will be behind us. We will not ever think of this again, the woman said. Good luck. I'm going to go get my daughter. Musicians Eager to Take Part in Jazz Party by Michael Bauer. It's a jazz party that's been going on for 56 years now, and it should come as no surprise that it has brought in numerous world-renowned jazz players during the last half century. This year will be no different, as drummer Kevin Kanner and bassist Charlie Silva will be among the many performers at this year's West Texas Jazz Party. For Silva, it will be his first time performing in Odessa. Silva currently lives in Orlando, Florida. It's good to hear that there's this really great jazz party going on in Texas, Silva said. I was invited by Johnny Vero. I'm really excited. Vero is a pianist who has played at the West Texas Jazz Party for years and will be back this year. Silva may reside in Florida, but he grew up in Santa Barbara, California, and started playing the bass in his early teens. I first picked up an electric bass from Sears, Silva said. I bought it myself. I saved the money. It was a cheap bass and amp. My first guitar, I took off the two high strings to make it look like a bass. I started plunking on an acoustic guitar like a bass. Silva's played with many different musicians over the years. He attended Cabrillo College in Santa Cruz, California, where he studied with trumpet player Ray Brown. All the different musicians I've played with have influenced me, Silva said. I've been around some great players. Ray Brown is my main man. I do what Ray does and lay down the bass grooves. In his early years of playing, Silva said he would play by ear. He listened to Motown music. I played along with all the Motown tunes and soul music, Silva said. My sister was really into that kind of music. Listening to James Jamerson, I think, was the key for me because he's the biggest innovator on electric bass. He was the influence of just about everybody. I just knew he was a great bass player. I think starting off by playing by ear really helped me because I have good ears. I rely on just listening and playing. Sometimes there are tunes that I won't know, but I'll fake my way through because I can listen. That's how I started. Silva talked about his excitement to get to play at the jazz party in Odessa. This is one of the bigger jazz gigs that I've gotten, Silva said. It's prestigious. I haven't been in the circuit for jazz for a long time. There are a lot of good jazz players on the circuit. On the side, I always play jazz. Jazz has always been the number one music that I've always played. Also playing at next week's jazz party will be Californian Canner. Canner currently lives in Los Angeles. He's amassed a large number of jazz credits, including recordings with Paul Anka, Bill Holman, Gilbert Castellanos, Melissa Morgan, Annie Selick, Gail Winters, and Michael Bublé, just to name a few. Canner has toured and performed with many artists, including John Pizzarelli. There are a number of jazz parties that these guys do, and this was one that they talked about a lot. It's awesome to connect with them at this party since it's talked about a lot. Pizzarelli talked about this a lot. I was in his band for quite a few years. Having the chance to be a part of it is great. Canner went to Hamilton High School and Music Academy in Los Angeles, graduating in 1997. Ever since he was a kid, Canner wanted to be a drummer. I would say high school was when I was pretty sure that I wanted to be a drummer, Canner said. I would sell all of my CDs to buy jazz records. It was my freshman year when I was pretty sure about it. It all started when his parents bought him some music of jazz legends like Count Basie and Glenn Miller. Some of the interest was fostered from the fact that I went to a music school, Canner said. I love the drums. I think it's natural with the instrument, like the drums, to gravitate towards jazz. The technique of the instrument is on display a little bit more, so you're really wowed by the musicians playing the music. At that same age, I was studying with another student that went to my high school, who's a couple of years older than me. He started taking lessons from the drummer Jeff Hamilton. He introduced me to Jeff musically, and that's what sealed the deal. He became my mentor for quite a few years. Canner has also toured with Maureen McGovern, the Gilbert Castellanos Quintet, the Bill Holman Band, the Gerald Clayton Trio, the Clayton Brothers, and the Clayton Hamilton Jazz Orchestra. I was Bill Holman's drummer for 10 years, Canner said. At that time, he recorded only 2 records. He was like nearing 80 at that time, so I don't know if he's recorded since then. I was in his band until 2011, and then I moved to New York in 2012. That was the gig I had for a very long time. Canner stayed in New York for about 5 years before returning to California. In addition to touring, he's played in a bunch of clubs over the years, even outside of the country, including Switzerland and France. Marion's in Bern, Switzerland, is always a blast, Canner said. Birdland was my favorite to play in New York. In L.A., my favorite place to play was the Blue Whale. They closed that down during the pandemic and didn't survive, which was a huge blow to the LA community. Paris was another good place to play. I do love playing Nighttown, which is in Cleveland. That's a really good place. Like Silva, Kanner is also excited to be able to play in Odessa. It's a great honor, Kanner said. I'm a huge fan of all of the other musicians that are there, so I'm looking forward to connecting with them. It's just good to be back out on the road. If you go, West Texas Jazz Party, 7 p.m. June 2nd, 7 p.m. June 3rd. If you go, West Texas Jazz Party, 7 p.m. June 2nd, 7 p.m. June 3rd, 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. June 4th, June 2nd at Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, June 3rd at Ector Theater, June 4th at Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Hot Summer Nights Set to Return by Michael Bauer. Hot Summer Nights is about to make its return for the summer of 2022. This year's lineup will include 8 different free performances, all spread out throughout the months of June and July, taking place every Friday night with the exception of July 1st. This will be the 27th year of Hot Summer Nights. Every year it grows, and every year we get in different ads, Odessa Arts Director Randy Hamm said. The public always seems to respond very positively to it. It's a great partnership that we have with downtown Odessa. This year, we got the added twists of having some of the performances at the Ector Theater and the Noel Heritage Plaza. This year will be a little bit different. For the first half of Hot Summer Nights, all the performances for the month of June will take place at the Ector Theater. The other half, which includes all of July's concerts, will be at Noel Heritage Plaza. If you want to be outside, come to the outside concerts, Hamm said. If you want to be inside, come to the inside concerts. I think our lineup is strong enough that you're going to want to come to both. Last summer, all the concerts took place at the Ector Theater. There were several reasons for that, Hamm said. One, we wanted to showcase the theater to the public for free so that anybody that wanted to get a look inside the theater could without worrying about ticket prices. A lot of people were really happy to be inside the Ector Theater with the air conditioning. The musicians were thrilled to be on that stage with the state-of-the-art sound system and everything, but there were people who missed bringing their dogs and missed being outside and wanted to go back out in the park. Of course, we don't want to alienate anyone, so we talked about it, and what we came up with was this great little compromise that I think is the best of both worlds, and that's have half of the shows at the Ector Theater and the other at the park. All performances for Hot Summer Nights will be at 7 p.m. The first concert this year will be the West Texas Jazz Society on June 3rd at Ector Theater. That performance will be a part of the West Texas Jazz Party. That has been one of my favorite things, Hamm said of the West Texas Jazz Party. Odessa is home to the longest-running jazz party in the world, and lots of people don't know that. By working with the Jazz Society to provide one concert free to the public, it's a great way to showcase jazz. It's a great way to highlight a homegrown operation that's been going on for 56 years and give them some more patrons. I always say if you don't like jazz, it's because you haven't heard the right jazz, and I think the West Texas Jazz Party can change your mind. We have world-class performers from the Permian Basin, and I think everyone should take advantage of that. Montopolis will follow on June 10th. After that will be White Ghost Shivers on June 17th. This summer will be the first time White Ghost Shivers will be back at Hot Summer Nights in over 5 years. White Ghost Shivers, the last time they performed was 2016, Hamm said. There were a couple of reasons why they haven't been back until this year. The pandemic hit and we couldn't bring them back, but it's nice to finally get all of the moving pieces together and bring them back to welcome them back. They put on a great postmodern jukebox-esque show that is well-suited for the Ector Theater. We're happy to have them. Montopolis will showcase the landscape of West Texas with its touring orchestra that puts music together with a film showing big band. I think that speaks to our area of Texas, and it's a great new experience that we've never been able to provide before, Ham said. Stephanie Urbina Jones and the Honky Tonk Mariachi will perform on June 24th. But for the record, all of these dates are my favorite, Ham said. But the one I'm looking forward to the most is Stephanie Urbina Jones. She does mariachi covers of country music hits. I can't wait to hear her on stage. The recorded version is amazing, and I can't wait to hear the live version. This year's lineup will also bring back some performers from last year, including Donovan Keith, who will perform on July 8th, and the Selfless Lovers, who will perform on July 22nd. Last year, we had two performances that were very well received, and that was the Selfless Lovers and Donovan Keith, Ham said. Both of those were really good, first-time performers, and we loved them so much that we wanted to bring them back. We're bringing them back to help close out the season. The Vinyl Stripes will perform on July 15th. Closing out the summer on July 29th will be the winner from the Battle of the Bands competition. The Battle of the Bands will take place on July 2nd at Ector Theater. Voting for that is already open and can be done online at odessaarts.org/contests. The voting will determine the top four bands that will compete on July 2nd for a chance to perform on July 29th. We're doing Battle of the Bands, and the winner of Battle of the Bands during Firecracker Fandango will close out the Hot Summer Nights season, Ham said. That will be one of their prizes. Hot Summer Nights is put on by both the Odessa Arts and Downtown Odessa. I've really enjoyed working with Downtown Arts on this, Ham said. It's a great partnership between the two organizations, and I love to see the way it's grown. I can't wait to see next year what it's like when we have more development downtown, so that we can capitalize on this. Downtown Odessa Director Casey Hallmark has also spoken highly about the partnership with Odessa Arts to put on Hot Summer Nights. We work with Odessa Arts on a couple of different projects, Hallmark said. We're very lucky to have such a great organization to work with us and to partner with on this event. We've worked with them in the past and continue to do so. Downtown Odessa handles all the infrastructure, and Odessa Arts handles all the booking of the artists. It has worked out well. It benefits the public, and it's a free event. If you go, Hot Summer Nights, 7 p.m. every Friday from June 3rd to July 29th, except July 2nd. Fridays in June at Ector Theater, and Fridays in July at Newell Heritage Plaza.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.